WCKU. Dip, 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 tea.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Babylon is falling, Babylon falling, Babylon falling, Babylon is falling. Our world on this earth seems down pressure, man, I kept the light. He give you peace of the pie. We close on the eye. This can maintain, some things are too straight. We need our seed to grow against the grave. Empires will crumble and fade away, or will I have to change? Either way, Jah, Babylon is falling.
It's getting hotter. Turn it up, turn it up. Here we go again, here we go again. We're standing firm when I ease up the pressure. Just like a volcano bubbling over. To take it to the heights, you have to step like a soldier. Revolution divine. Jah Jah give us the sign. Yeah. Who got the eyes and let them see? Who got the ears and let them hear? Here we go again, will it ever end? Politics, politics, monumental of injustice, it just can't stand. Fire up a bomb on your idiot plan. So you better understand, like a castle in the sand.
Babylon is falling. Oh, Babylon is falling. Babylon is falling. Babylon falling. Babylon is falling. Babylon is falling. Babylon is falling.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It is another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I'm on the air with...
Renee Jordan. And today we are going to be talking about all things mental health with our with an expert that is no stranger to Montreal, born and raised, and she is a... physiotherapist
and psychotherapist.
You know what, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I know I'm gonna get it wrong. A psychotherapist, and we'll get into that, what the differences between those things are. A psychotherapist, and 2 years ago she started Natasha Pennycook's psychotherapy, offering one-to-one therapy, clinical consultations, speaking engagements, and workshop facilitation. Welcome, welcome, Natasha. Thank you for joining us this evening. And just for the butchering that I have done, if you can just clarify for the people out there, what exactly is a psychotherapist?
No problem. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Kim. Thank you so much for having me. I am so happy and honored to be here. I grew up listening to CQUT, so it's such like, that I'm here on with you both this evening. So yes, as I was introduced, I'm Natasha Pennycook. I am a registered psychotherapist. And what I really do, I work with men and women and other folks who are really struggling with trauma, with anxiety, with depression, to really be able to get out of that fear, get out of the self-doubt, get out of the worry, get out of their own heads, push past the trauma to really move forward to heal and live their best lives. So what a psychotherapist is someone who specializes in talk therapy, working within the mental health, to be able to give the therapy. So basically what that is, it's that talk therapy. It's like being able to talk about some of the things that have happened in the past, some past traumas, some of the past things that are impacting our ability to function, our ability to be well, our ability to take care of ourselves, things that may be coming up that's impacting our day-to-day lives. So that's what a psychotherapist is. If you're wondering how I got into this field, I have a educational background in psychology. I went to Dawson College, did psychology. I went to Concordia University, did psychology. And then I went over to UWE, the University of West Indies in Barbados and Jamaica, and also studied psychology. So my educational background is all psychology.
International psychology.
Internationally, exactly. Yes, yes.
So let me throw this first question out to you. When did you fall in love with psychology and decide to become a psychotherapist?
So that's a great question. I think, you know what, I think it was during my time at Dawson, I had always loved interacting with people. And I was always really curious about what makes people people, right? Like kind of that curiosity of how we're impacted, whether it be from our culture, our community, or our families, the things that really make us tick, the things about our personality that drives what we do, how we behave, how we think, how we act. So I think it was a lot of my different interactions with the people around me, as well as my own family background, just wondering, you know, like the different things that make people do and say and become who they are. So that's what always drove me to be interested in that human behavior aspect of psychology.
And just to clarify for people that, you know, when they think of therapy and they think of psychotherapy and then they think of therapists and then they think of psychologists, what are the differences between those categories?
So between those professions, that's a question I get all the time, and I'm definitely happy that you asked, because I think that's a question, especially here within our Black community, right, that we maybe get stuck on and tripped up on sometimes. So the differences are, so myself as a psychotherapist, I do that talk therapy. So individuals who come to work with me, that I will not be diagnosing anyone. I'm not going to be prescribing anything. I'm going to be helping you to understand and to look at the different aspects of your life that may be causing maybe some challenges or struggles or difficulties. So some of my colleagues who are psychologists, they also do the talk therapy. However, they go a step above and they're able to diagnose. So what a diagnosis is basically able to say that you have a medical diagnosis of depression, of anxiety, of PTSD, which is trauma. So being able to give that diagnosis. Now, going another step further would be like a psychiatrist. And a psychiatrist is a medical doctor, a medical professional who went to medical school, but specialized in psychiatry. So what psychiatrists do mostly is that they are able, again, to diagnose, but also to do the treatment of mental health disorders through medication management. So those are the ones, the psychiatrists, who are going to be doing the prescribing. So, you know, that's where the antidepressants or the anti-anxieties come into play. Usually a psychiatrist or a family doctor are the ones that do the prescribing.
thank you for giving us that, distinguishing all of those. And I think it could be quite cumbersome for people to figure out who they should go see or where they need to go or where they should even begin. When it comes to mental health and managing the way through the pandemic for the Black community and relating to our audience, you know, on top of being in the pandemic, we all experienced the death of George Floyd. Yes. And what that brought in terms of racial trauma to a situation that was already new, that was already traumatizing, that was already too much to bear with. How can someone like yourself help people to get through that racial trauma?
That's a great question as well. I think that a lot of people, the idea of racial trauma, especially for us Black folks or racialized folks, the idea of racial trauma has always been there, has always been felt. We've been navigating it. But I think that the name or naming it racial trauma has been new to a lot of people. A lot of people have approached me over the last year saying that, you know what, I've never really heard of it put that way, but it fits. It makes so much sense. It really helps me to understand what has been happening. So then you have, you know, COVID, which we are still in, like two years going, right? And then you have all of the stuff from last summer. So with George Floyd and some of the, like Dante Wright as well, right? We've had all of the stuff, Breonna Taylor. It's been about a year now since Breonna Taylor, or a little more. So we have all these instances that have happened. And then of course, now here in Canada with the residential school systems and all of that, right? So you have all of these instances of racial trauma. So I guess how to explain it is these instances of trauma, things that have been traumatic, but based on race, based on something that we cannot take away from ourselves, based on being Black, based on being Indigenous, based on being other individuals of color. So you have these instances of the microaggressions, the discrimination, the prejudice based solely on someone's race. So that is what racial trauma is. And basically, like, to go a step further, it's the someone being judged differently because of the race or because of the ethnicity that they hold. But that's like what that racial trauma is. And racial trauma is something that is traumatic because you have people who have difficulty sleeping, being very hypervigilant. Hypervigilance is like being very aware of their surroundings, right? And we as Black people, we're very much aware of our surroundings when we're going out, how we're driving, we pass a police officer, are we going to get stopped? We're super hypervigilant, we're super aware of our surroundings because we know that we are going to be treated differently solely because of our race. So you have all of these different instances. People have increased worry, difficulty sleeping, nightmares, difficulty eating, difficulty concentrating, focusing because of these traumatic instances that have happened, right? And one thing about racial trauma, these things don't have to solely happen to us. And that's one thing that makes it different from some other traumas, right? It doesn't mean that these things have to happen to us. Because they are happening or because they have occurred, other individuals who look like me, mm-hmm. I automatically know that because they look like me, they were singled out because of something that I also have. So it can be also traumatic to someone who's viewing or witnessing these things that have happened, such as George Floyd.
What you said was so poignant because a couple weeks ago I was driving to Ottawa, and I just saw a police car pull up and my heart just started hammering at 100 miles an hour, and then the same police car came and passed but had all the lights flashing, and I'm like, am I going too fast? Automatically, you know, just the basic stuff of like not being wanting to be pulled over, but then the added tension of like being a Black individual driving a car and being on the street. And what you said about like just seeing people, like I remember when Philando Castile and Alton Sterling were killed back to back, like I remember vividly waking up, and you know, as most of us do, we take up our phones and we're going through social media, and I just remember I started bawling when I saw the video, you know, and he's extremely far from me. He's in the States. I don't know him. I've never met him, but it was the trauma of that happening to a father, to a man, to a black man. It just completely broke me down personally. So I can imagine just other folks who have been through similar situations, you know. So wow, I never heard of racial trauma before, but that just kind of explained it vividly for me.
Yes. And it's interesting because here in the Toronto area, I volunteer with an organization called Keep Six, right? And they're an organization that works with those who have been impacted by the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. And last year, I think it was June 4th, around then, we had a show on called Coping with Racial Trauma. And you can find it on the Instagram page, on the IGTV. So a show about coping with racial trauma, and I spoke about racial trauma, and I gave a similar definition that I just gave, and we had different individuals on speaking of their experiences. And in that show, similarly to Kim, what you were saying, I was speaking about racial trauma, and all of a sudden it hit me, and I started bawling right there in the show. And it's this idea of like how we are so impacted about feeling so kind of so helpless, right? Of an uncertain situation that are uncertain of what the outcome could be.
Yeah.
And for me, it kind of really hit me raising a little boy of when is that time where my little boy will stop being this cute little boy and start being looked at and feared? And just the idea of that, even like now as we're speaking about, just the idea of that as it hits me, it's so, I guess it's heart-wrenching, right? Mm-hmm. You mentioned being a parent as well, Kim. So it's like this idea of what can I do to keep myself safe, but also my little ones safe, or our little ones safe, right? Yeah. And a lot of times it feels like there's nothing that we can do because it's in someone else's hands. Mm-hmm. And it's really sad and it's heart-wrenching. And that is racial trauma, right?
So given that it's something that is really outside of us, and it's not really like typical therapy where we can reframe, like regardless of how I reframe my thinking, it will never quite change the way the outside world might view me or the way someone might view me just because of the color of my skin. How do you help people to navigate that trauma? How do you help them to move through it or pass, if even possible?
Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting because as we are in the world now where people are more aware of racial trauma, you hear about organizations who are now doing the diversity, equity, inclusion, and people who look like us and our listeners today are being called on more to talk about their experiences and things like that. But you have to also remember, we, our parents, grandparents, our children, we've been going through this forever, right? Yeah. This is not new for us. It's new for a lot of other people who are not racialized, but it's not new for us. And then on top of it, we're being called on to tell our stories or how can we help or how can we train or how can we fix the problem. But the problem doesn't lie with us. This is the thing. And this is the thing that I want everyone to recognize, that yes, we are impacted 100%. Impacted by the problem, but the problem is not about us. It's about someone else's fear and someone else's insecurity of us because of the unknown, because of biases, because of stereotypes, because of whatever was passed down. But it's not of us. So when we talk about how do we heal from it, it's really about how do we, yes, work through some of, like you're talking about, the reframing, these cognitive therapies, as people talk about, but it's really how do we step back and how do we find community, right? Mm. And this is a different sense. It's not of that like your Western therapy, but really more from an Afrocentric kind of lens. How do we find community? How are we able to be open and honest and free to take up space and just share space to talk about how this impacts me, to talk about, I was driving to Ottawa and a cop passed me and this is what I felt, right? I instantaneously know what you mean, but in certain circles they may not understand what you mean. So how can you find that community where you're not left having to explain, where it's like, I know what you mean, where you can be comfortable to talk about that. There's something in that as a therapeutic modality in and of itself that is so helpful, because it's not them you being put back into a realm where you have to explain. It's, I see you, I get you, I resonate with you, I get it, right? There's something healing in that. So I wanted to find a community that tried to be able to speak about it, but also having space to freely talk about the experience. One thing that I have recognized over my career, and especially in the last number of years, it's that people's experiences of racism, racialized folks, they're not believed. They're not believed by the wider population. And there's something so invalidating about having someone else tell you that your experience is not valid.
Yeah.
Okay. And this happens over and over and over. So there's something so invalidating about that. And then a lot of times we're left questioning, well, is it true? Was it that bad? Did I really take it on that way? Did I really feel that way?
Is it really racism? Is that person just having a bad day?
Yeah, maybe they didn't mean it that way. Well, they said they didn't mean it that way. Maybe it's true, but I know how I felt.
Yeah.
Right? Being able to even tap into, I know what I felt. I know how that landed for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's something huge in that. And what I do when I speak with my clients a lot about racial trauma, it's how do we validate our own emotionality? Wow. That is so huge. It's not only validating that I like your hair, I like your shirt, but how do we validate our emotions? Right? How do we make space for our emotions so we can have these conversations?
Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are talking to Natasha Pennycook, a therapist, psychotherapist based in Toronto, born and raised in Montreal. We do have to take a quick break and get back to you. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
I don't need sirens. réviser les pages de mon histoire. Et posséder les recoins de mon placard. Mes moments de lumière, de rouge et de noir. Ce chapitre tire à sa fin. Je peux fermer les yeux, la plume à la main. En l'honneur de qui je serai demain. Oh, 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 oh. Nier tout point de repère et repartir à zéro pour prouver qu'on existe. Ce temps qui file et nous oublie, qu'on soit vilain ou héros, à travers la tempête. Regretter le passé, ça ne vaut pas la peine. Moi j'ai tout donné, mon bonheur et ma haine. Et malgré le doute qui me mène en enfer, je veux savourer ce goût sucré amer. Alors à ma santé, je vais lever ce verre. Ah oui, je lève ce verre. Certaines leçons m'ont été cruelles. Moi qui me pensais quasi immortelle, suis tombée à genoux, les mains vers le ciel. En business comme en amour, oh, oh, oh. Hey. Nier tout point de repère et repartir à zéro pour prouver que j'existe. Temps qui passe, temps qui file et nous oublie, qu'on soit vilain ou héros à travers la Regretter le passé, ça ne vaut pas la peine. Moi j'ai tout donné, mon bonheur et ma haine. Et malgré le doute qui me mène en enfer, je veux savourer
yes, yes, yes,
ce goût
sucré amer. Back, you are listening to Soulful Sectors here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm on the air with
Renee Jordan, and we are talking with Natasha Penny Cook. Natasha, who is a psychotherapist, yeah, I got it right now, and consultant, who has been running her own for the last 2 years and is really helping the community out in a big way in navigating through racial trauma. And where we left off, we were talking about racial trauma, the idea of racial trauma, how we move through society, how it makes us feel, and really validating, you know, that it is real, that it's something that is out there, that we need spaces to discuss it, we need spaces to work through it. And I was just thinking, like, I think there's a lot of new terms and a lot of heavy new terms and some things that maybe we've always been living through that sort of have just come to light. And the other day I was talking with a friend and they introduced me to the term of code switching. Mm. And I never really quite heard of this before. And I was like, oh my goodness, that's something that we do. And we do it all the time. And what are the effects of code switching? And code switching is in fact just, I guess, changing the way or changing the way you are depending on who you're with.
Yeah, changing your language.
Give it a better.
Yeah. It's when you change, like, your language in order to fit the folks who are not necessarily from that particular culture. Like, for example, if someone is speaking in Jamaican Patois, they switch to standard English because the folks around them don't understand what they're saying.
And, like, I was wondering if there was any
long-term effects of doing that? Like, is that something that you need to work through in therapy to show up as yourself in true self in every situation? Or is that something that we just can't avoid?
That's a great, great question. And I love, you know what? It's so funny because a lot of people are now talking about this idea of co-switching and authentic self and everything. But if you also think about it, we all have various selves, right? We have our professional self, we have our self with our partner, ourselves with our children, ourselves with our parents and grandparents and community, so on and so forth. I think what we have to think more of is, how do I make space for myself, right? How do I make space for all of these selves of me to show up, to take up space, to be comfortable? So when we now talk about code switching, there's this idea that in my professional self, around certain people, right, corporate world, whatever, I may be like this. But even around my professional self, around my colleagues who may look like me and resonate me and have the same background, I may be like this. So there is some code switching there, but it's all about where do I feel comfortable and safe, right? That code switching, that's about a safety. Yeah. And I'm not only talking about physical safety, but I'm also talking about emotional safety. Right? Where can I show up and feel safe to show up as my cultural self, as my community self, as my corporate self, right? And I don't think there is actually an issue with that, because it's about, how do I find safety for all these different selves of me? And it doesn't mean that I'm being inauthentic, but it's recognizing that I do have these different selves, right? The way you're going to go out and kick it with your friends is differently than you're going to go address to your grandparents. Right? Just
100%.
All of us, whether your friends are from your same culture background or your parents, you know, you go see your grandparents, like, good morning, good afternoon. You with your friends, like, yo, what's up?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's about recognizing that part of the code switching, and actually where the code switching comes from, it's about that safety and that being comfortable in your situations. Now, you have some people who may argue the other side, that no, you're not being your authentic self. But I think we have to get out of the idea of self in a silo, right? And I think
wait, what does that mean? Self in a silo?
Yes. So this idea of self in a silo is this idea that all of myself, all the parts of myself have to fit into this box.
Right.
Right? That all of myself, selves have to fit into this box. But we cannot take apart that we have intersectionality. Right. And what intersectionality is, there are different pieces of us. So myself as a Black woman of Caribbean descent, born and raised in Montreal, now living in the GTA, there are different selves there. Montreal is very different from the GTA, and how I might interact with my Montreal people might be different from Toronto people, and so on and so forth. So I think that making space for those different selves is very important. It's very important because we as people, we have different pieces of us that need support in maybe different ways and different realms. And if we're not attuned to that, we can miss out on some things that we need.
And I think the way I was thinking of it more so in terms of code switching wasn't all alone for like the way that you speak, but more so for the way that we show up. Yeah. As a Black woman showing up in the workplace, you know, you're like, oh, how should I wear my hair? Like, if I wear it like this, then it, like, is it going to draw some attention? Do I want the attention? Do I not want the attention? How can I just fit in, or how can I smooth my way in and not, you know, create the wrong type of environment?
Impression.
Exactly. So I think in terms of switching, like, sometimes I feel like there's a certain self that we need to be. Where, like, I think during the pandemic and being able to work from home, I definitely had more freedom in, you know, the way I wanted to show up from day to day and the way I wanted to look from day to day that didn't necessarily exist within the office setting.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think during the pandemic has been one of those times that have created spaces on how do I show up? Right? How do I show up on screen to make sure I'm still professional, but still being able to be me, especially I'm in my own home environment. So you've had many instances about people wondering if they could go into the office on Zoom or whatever video platform with our hair tied up or our hair in wraps and things like that, right? So we've had a lot of that. And I think that it just calls to the change of workplace culture as well, because you've heard more so in the States, but like there's been laws passed about mm-hmm. what is considered professional, for especially for black hair, right? I mean, you've had a lot of times you've heard about children in schools where there was this one young man who was made to cut off his locks to be able to graduate, and how different children are having to straighten their hair to be able to go to school and things like that. Yeah. And you've also had that replicated in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So it's about recognizing too that there are different understandings, I'll put it that way, of what is workplace culture and what is considered or deemed appropriate and corporate, but also where does that come from, right? Whose corporate world are we trying to fit into? And that's where a lot of also what I talk about is anti-Black racism,
mm-hmm.
right? So these corporate worlds, are they set out for Black individuals or other racialized folks to be able to succeed, and what things are called out? And those are some of the things around anti-Black racism, such as hair in the workplace and things like that.
Hmm. We're going to take a quick break to pay some bills. And we're going to get back with this discussion a little bit more about racial trauma and also how the Black community, their reaction to therapists and therapy, and how we can change some of that. So keep it locked. You're listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
She spends her days here watching people live their lives. She doesn't realize she's getting older. Invitations to break away from the norm. So scared, what have you got to lose? You might think the water's too hot, no. A couple seconds, you might get used to it. See, your heart is beating out of your chest, no.
It's like the morning time, don't wanna wake up, I just wanna stay in bed. But if I'm next to you, I'm looking forward to just laying in this bed. get so. Promise you'll never let go. I don't want no one else. So we should be chilling back. Ain't nothing wrong with that. So tell me that, tell me that. Tell me I'm the best I am. I be feeling like yes I am, I am. You know I'm the best I am. Be a fool to not take me as I am. Tell me I'm the best I am. I be feeling like yes I am, I am. You know I'm the best I am. You be a fool to not take me as I am. Sweetest thing I know, like my favorite Lauren song, and I need you really bad. Don't take me for granted, you'll be regretting it. Oh, I should be your last, oh yeah. Ooh, that never gets old. Promise you'll never let go. Grass ain't green nowhere else. So we should be chilling back. Ain't nothing wrong with that. So tell me that, tell me that. Tell me I'm the best I am. I be feeling like yes I am, I am. You know I'm the best I am. Be a fool to not take me as I am. Tell me I'm the best I am. I be feeling like yes I am, I am. You know I'm the best I am. Yeah, you be a fool to not take me as I am.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Sexing her moment, so hypnotizing, so hustling. I feel you. And the kick is raining down, electrifying, choking all my senses, babe. Temptation. Another moment without you, repression got me going out of my head. Passion. Breathe your life back into me while we love until the sun comes out. Till the sun come down. Love until the sun comes down. Love until the sun comes down. I taste you, juices
sweet like nectar, finger licking good. Got me here wanting more. Come closer, close ain't close enough. I need you next to me. I'm craving for your love. Temptation, can't control this feeling. Spirit sparks a fire deep inside of me. Passion, your love, my body's healing. Love until the sun comes out. Until the sun comes out.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. It is another Tuesday evening, and you are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson. I'm on the air with
Renee Jordan, and we have a special guest, psychotherapist and consultant Natasha Pennycook. And we are talking about racial trauma and therapy and the two of them together. Natasha, you were telling us about, we're discussing about code switching and yes, in terms of how showing up in the workplace and what that has meant over the course of the pandemic in terms of Black women or even in terms of Black children at work and school and how they show up in terms of their hair and not necessarily being able to graduate or offer the same treatment because of those things. And all of these things, all of that code switching and all of that, you know, wondering if you can show up with your actual hair and be accepted and graduate and get the success that everyone else has. I think that adds to the racial trauma in a bit, like when we show up and we're rejected or what it might have done to a child to tell him, you know, okay, just remove your locks so that you can graduate. You know, it's just hair. So, but it's not just hair in that situation. It goes deeper. What are we telling that child by doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly it, right? You hit the nail on the head. What are we telling? What messages are we telling our children and us, frankly, as adults? What messages are we telling the younger folks about who they are and what is deemed good or proper or acceptable, right? And also, what kind of things are we focusing on or have been focused on as opposed to their scholarship and their academia, right? Like telling someone they can't graduate because of their locks. What does that say? That your hair is not good enough to graduate even though you got the best grades in the class or something like that, right? So we have to be very careful around these messages that we are perpetuating, the messages that are being told to our younger generations. And you're right, it does add on to the racial trauma. Right? It adds on because it becomes, not only do I have to worry about school and the grades and the class and lunches and the bullies and teachers, but now I have to worry about how I have my hair. When
I have no to worry about to worry existing about as a human being,
right,
in a classroom, right? Because I have a darker skin tone.
Exactly. And how that is singled out. Right? Because I have the darker skin tone.
I think it also feels like you have less control. Like, yes, everybody wants to control a piece of your being. You know, it should look like this. It should act this way. It should be like this. In this setting, you need to fit in this box. And these are the things that you need to do to present yourself here with these people that don't look like you. Yeah. And I think that really adds something to the way, you know, we move through society. And how do we have young children and ourselves, you know, able to raise their heads high and walk through the world if we tell them that, oh, well, the way you are naturally is not okay.
Not enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what it is, right? It's then, how do we understand the generational impact of the racial trauma on our parents' generation, on our generation, on our children's generation? How do we understand that impact so we could mitigate it, so we can change it, so we can stop it? And I think this is a lot of the work that I've been doing lately around that, around how do we heal from it? And it's hard, right? I'm not going to say mm-hmm. that it's easy, because there's generational trauma. There's also generational healing. Yes. And it's being able to understand, how do I heal through the generations? Well, understanding that my understanding right here, right now in my life is very, very different from my parents' generation or my grandparents' generation. But how do I start that healing within the generation so that I can leave that legacy of healing for my children and my children's children and so on, mm-hmm. right? And part of that is really, how do we change those narratives in the school system? Because we know there's the school to prison pipeline. We know that there's mm-hmm. children in school who are being ostracized or pointed out for taking a patty for lunch. There was a case here in the Toronto area of that a couple of years ago, about someone who took a patty for lunch and being told it wasn't nutritious or filling or something like that, right? So it's like all these little instances are being singled out for our children. Mm. And how do we create now a society of healing when we're going through all of this? Mm. It becomes very, very challenging.
That is a deep question, because even before coming to your door, or before someone is able to ask for help, there's always been a sort of stigma within the community, like, you know, you need help, but you're afraid to ask. And like, oh, I would go see a therapist, but I'm afraid what other people might think. Or does that mean something is wrong with me? Or people are going to think that I'm not good enough? Or there's all that to overcome before we even get to the healing and the unpacking and going through all of that. I mean, what would you tell someone who has this sort of ideas of therapy? Like, often you have people who are like, well, I'm not sick, or if I'm feeling unwell, or I'm feeling something within me that's not right, I pray about it, or I go to mm-hmm. church. And mm-hmm. these have been the traditional coping skills of, I would say, the Black community. Yeah. And I mean, for so much, maybe they've worked in some ways in helping us to push through some things, but definitely there's a lot of stuff that is still left there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is something called mental health stigma, right? Mm-hmm. And there is Black mental health stigma within our community, within the Black community. And this stigma, to be honest, it's been there for a reason. Because if you think about it, now I like to kind of go back, right? Because there are these situations, I'll put that in history, where we as Black people have not been treated well at all. Right. And if now you're talking about mental health, for a long time, people who look like us, who might have gone for access for mental health care, could not trust the system.
Yeah.
Because we were experimented on. We were told that, okay, well, we're going to use like laser treatment, pieces of brains being taken out, like shock therapy. You have medication trials of Black folks. So you have to understand where this stigma comes from, right? Mm-hmm. It comes from the idea that I am not safe, right? Kind of back to that safety that we spoke about.
Yeah. And also safe. It was seen as like, this is some white people, SHI, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is it. We
don't do this. We put our head down and we just move forward.
Yeah, pray about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 And the reasons why that was the case in the first place is that for a long time now, we're talking about like there's this syndrome called like post-traumatic slave syndrome.
Coined by Dr. Joy DeGruy Leary. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So there's this theory out there that us as individuals and our ancestors, we could not show weakness. If you think about 400 years ago, we could not show weakness because that meant that maybe we were sold off, or our kin was sold off, or we were given different tasks and jobs and things like that. So yes.
Or worse, we could have been killed.
Or worse, we were killed and flogged and sold off or whatever.
What was even worse is we couldn't show weakness, but we couldn't show too much strength either.
Exactly.
Like, we always had to find this middle ground.
Yes. But think about that, right? It's so powerful what you just said. We could not show weakness, or we could not show too much strength. So we have to find what is the status quo, right? And just kind of skirt that line. Right?
Damn. No, I'm thinking
that line today. I think in some areas, we're still skirting that line today. Like, even through in the workplace, you know, they're still acceptable for others, acceptable for you. This for others and this for you. So we're still like, okay, I don't know, but if I ask too many questions, then if I don't ask, then. So I think we're still in that middle ground stage.
And in some ways we are, right? I know there's a whole bunch of us that are trying to like push that narrative, but it's such a hard narrative to push, right? Because we're fighting against all these internalized stuff. And I talk also about internalized racism. And Kim, that's kind of like what you're kind of alluding to. I can't be here. Can't show that weakness,
yeah,
because of, and I can't show the strength because of.
But like, I'm getting chills just thinking about this right now. I'm just thinking about like Simone Biles, right?
Yes,
we're 2021. Yes. This is a perfect example of you can't show too much strength. Because she's being ousted out of the Olympics because she's doing stuff that them others can't do. And I think about Venus and Serena when they were
privileged. This term privilege when associated with her, and you're just sort of like, huh?
It's like, well, yeah, she does have privilege, but she also had privilege to speak up and to say, I'm not okay right now. And I'm going to pick myself first, right? There was a meme that I saw about Simone Biles where like people are saying, if a 24-year-old advocating for herself and her mental health is making you upset, you need to go check yourself. Right? You need to go check yourself and understand what your intention is, because this is a young woman who has clearly been in the public eye at such a young age and being told she's the best of the best in her field as a Black woman in gymnastics. And here there are people who are upset about that. I am so proud of her for putting herself first. As women, as Black women, we're not taught to do that. And here she is doing that and being an example on a world stage.
And another person as well, Naomi Osaka. She also had to take a mental health break because she's being ostracized because she's amazing. And then they're just like, no, we don't want you to be amazing. Yeah.
But this is the thing, right? If you think about it, it's you have these young Black women who are pinning themselves towards saying, no, I'm not well. I need some space. I need some time. I cannot do this. I cannot push my body to its limits anymore without taking a rest. And then you have people who are upset about that, right? And this is the thing that kind of like really irks me. The people who are upset, it's so what I believe is based on their own ideas and their Black biases of what these Black women should be doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But they're taking a stand.
My God.
You know, I think when people look at it, when I look at it, I see it as bravery to be able to say, no, I shouldn't. Because when you think about competing on that level, if your head is not in the game, to spiral through in the air, you can cause serious damage to yourself. So to be able to say no, that I might well, that I'm going to sit out, it takes a lot of courage. And it takes a lot of courage to say that when everybody else is looking at you and is expecting you to go out there and just win them the medals. You know, go and be that person for us. But we have to be someone for ourselves first before we can be for others.
Yes.
I have a question. How much of this stigma that we are so powerful is our fault? Why I ask this question is because I find that we you know, that what you were saying about racial stigma earlier is that we just put our head down and we never talk about our problems. We never let anybody know what's going on. And so we're so used to, you know, I just saw a couple of posts on Instagram, like, since 1984, 15, 16 or 17 out of 30 of the gold medals won in the Olympic races, the women Olympic races, were won by Jamaican women. And, you know, there's this stigma of greatness and, you know, especially I find with black women are strong, black women are this, black women are that, but it's only now that, especially on social media, we're talking about vulnerability and weakness. And I'm wondering, like, how much of the accountability for that do we have to take on ourselves? Because, you know, it's okay to say that, okay, they have. But when do we say, you know, we've also done damage to ourselves, and we've also perpetuated the stereotype that we're super strong and we're invulnerable and we're this and we're that.
So, and we've done it to each other as well.
Exactly.
We continue to. I think the, I guess, not so easy answer to that, Kim, is if we can get out of this idea of survival mode, then we can understand that we're doing it to ourselves. But a lot of us are still in survival mode, and I'll explain that for everyone. The idea of survival mode is that we are just existing to survive. We are surviving the day in and the day out, and we are doing these things to protect ourselves that might not be so healthy for ourselves, but we're doing these things to protect ourselves. And because we're in this mode of, I need to protect, we just continue going on having to protect, whether it's protect from emotional, from fears, from vulnerabilities, from struggles, or from physical. It's the, I need to put my head down and just go through. If we can get out of this survival mode into what I call this healing mode, then we can start to be more self-reflective and more self-aware and have some more insight that this thing that I am doing, whether it's I'm telling everyone, no, I'm fine, I'm okay. This thing that I'm doing, I'm actually not okay. I'm actually causing myself more harm because I do need help. I cannot always be okay, but it takes a certain frame of reference, certain mindset, a certain level of insight and self-awareness, and the ability to reflect.